Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We are coming back around to you now that the Buffalo Bills coaching hires have started coming through, starting with head coach, of course, and now we have some coordinators and different position group coaches are in place. Dan, it's been a kind of a whirlwind since we last spoke with everybody in Bills Mafia, with the Coach McDermott firing and the elevation of Brandon Bean and the whole schlobnockle that was. Terry Pegula hasn't been in front of the camera again for good reasons. Here we are looking at the off season. And Dan, where's your head at these days, my friend?
There's been a lot of positive, I think, that's come out of the Brady hiring and the way the Bills have handled it. And there's also been there's been some question marks as well. I think it's good for us to go into it with optimism. Here heading into the offseason, based on some of the coaching moves that we've seen, the additions to the staff, particularly the coordinator additions that Brady has made. I also wouldn't sleep on some of the lower level coaches they've brought in, position level coaches, because it is really clear the Buffalo Bills are moving toward more of a youth movement at a lot of these position coach positions. And I think it's in response to some stuff that we're going to talk about as we unpack our reaction. But JJ, I think there's a lot. I think it's fair for Bills fans to be positive about what's happening, but also operate with a high level of skepticism based on how, Bean in particular happens to handle the PR. He's in the news again for all the wrong reasons, for all the wrong comments that he shouldn't be making. And I think it does weigh a little bit out in an outsized way, heavily on ultimately what has been a pretty successful first couple of weeks for Brady individually as a new coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, in some ways it almost like every ounce of goodwill that Brady engenders in Bills Mafia and the fan base, Bean is there 1 second later to tear it all back down and make us think he's an egomaniac, maniacal, like, jerk, right? Like,
wild nothing. Decisions.
Yeah. It's like, why are you saying this to people on the record, right? Like, why are you talking like this? So it's interesting because I think that simultaneously Bills Mafia, it's the switch happens so fast, right? Like Bills Mafia, Brandon Bean is elevated. Joe Brady is hired after 9 candidates are interviewed over the course of a week. And everybody was like, finally the thing to unite us all. Everyone hates it, right? Like Joe Brady as coach. And it literally days later, everyone's like, okay. I guess the good thing about the Bills for the last 2 years has been Joe Brady's offense and their production. Well, let's see what this is. And people started kind of jumping on the bandwagon again. And then, you have Bean ripping people off and throwing them on the dirt and spitting on them. but I think it's interesting because I'm firmly in the camp at this point in time of shrug maybe, right? Like that's where I live. I'm just like, okay, right? Like I recognize I'm more comfy in the waters of something needed to change. I was hoping it'd be Bean and McDermott. I think we established that on the previous pod very clearly. But because Bean was elevated and they've got Joe Brady, I'm into this position where I'm like, okay, change had to happen. This is pretty substantial change. I'm in. Like, let's ride. Let's see what's going to happen.
It's as much change as you would expect from hiring a coach who's been with the organization for the last 3 or 4 years, right? Like, the changes are not just marginal either, but it's also not, I think, to the scale of bringing in a completely new regime would be. But it's very reflective of the approach the Bills have taken since Bean has come on board. It's as balanced approach as you can imagine. They are going to largely keep things the same on offense. There looks like they're going to dramatically revamp the defense, which I know you want to get into. But yes. JJ, let's take this chronologically, right? Let's start with the press conference, the Brady press conference with Bean. I think to your point, when the decision came out that it was going to be Joe Brady, lots of Bills Mafia, myself included, was like, this is not change. This is Bean hiring someone who is going to challenge him less in personnel decisions, right? That was my read on it. It felt unimaginative. A lot of football folks thought it felt unimaginative. There were a lot of questions of why not hold out for Clint Kubiak. Well, in hindsight now, it looks like he was always going to Vegas and people knew that, right? But it just felt like the facade of change, performative change, And we were left to believe that, oh, so stuff really is going to stay the same. The culture McDermott created is going to stay the same, which is good. They just didn't want McDermott a part of it. Then Brady, he comes in, and honestly, dude, that was a winning press conference out of him. He did come in with a different energy, and an energy, I think, at least from my observation, the Bills have been lacking. Lots has come out since McDermott left for a reasonable and I think justified groundswell of support for him. But then the stories started to leak. Like, we found out more about 13 seconds, I think, than any of us had previously known. You know, Ty Dunn, who is the McDermott antagonist forever, you know, revealed some interviews that he had had with McDermott where McDermott seemed really sensitive to all the credit Josh was getting for the success of this team and having to constantly remind people, hey, I ended the drought before Josh got here, right? It really did seem like a team that was weighed down by the rigidity of a very, very good, very successful coach. But when you looked around other locker rooms, and I think the best and worst thing that could have happened to Sean McDermott this year is the fact that the NFL started showing post-game coach speeches. You look at like Vrabel with his Warriors stuff with the Patriots. You look at Liam Cohen like spraying water around the locker room. You look at the shirtless jubilation of Ben Johnson in Chicago. And then you get McDermott's post games versus tough. It's like a sermon, you know, like you could feel the weight of expectations every time McDermott spoke to that team. And the Brady hire and the feeling I got from the first impression of his press conference is that it's going to look a lot more like Liam Cohen's vibe and Ben Johnson's vibe and not Sean McDermott's vibe. And that to me is a big change. And I think probably a needed change for this clubhouse.
I know Sean McDermott is not a boomer by definition, but he gave boomer dad energy.
He's the most boomer non-boomer ever.
Right. He gave boomer dad energy his entire tenure as the coach. It never said anything to the media. He was very robotic, very rigid. We win or we learn. You know, we're going to get better. We're going to improve 1% every day. Like growth mindset, you know, complementary football, like all of the different tropes and things that he spilled out there. And I think that, you know, there's the sense that like, oh, in his last season or two seasons, he started to soften, show a little bit more of his emotion and his personality. And what I saw was the emotion and personality of like somebody who's like addicted to self-help books and has this like, you know, is very keyed in and researched on how to lead, but doesn't have necessarily the natural charisma that you're talking about with Ben Johnson, Liam Cohen, like Mike Vrabel, like coaches who engender the real love of their players and not just the respect of their players. Because I think everyone across the board uniformly in that locker room, almost everybody, maybe not Keon Coleman and a few others who seem to not really buy in, had respect for Sean McDermott. They respected what he built. They respected the way he was prepared and prepared them, but they didn't want, they weren't killing themselves for him. Like, look at the injury bug that we always point to. We know, and this is just me like talking, right? Like we know nothing, but we know that players around the league play with injuries all the time. Josh Allen is an absolute warrior. We also know that if somebody doesn't like absolutely buy into what their coach is selling, it's easier to be like, nah, I'm going to spend that time in the cold tub. Like I'm injured. I'm off. I'm out. Not to mention you have mega high profile stars like Stefon Diggs wanting their way out of the team after signing an extension. There's something to that. There's something to the fact that Sean McDermott doesn't have a coaching tree. They don't even call, you know, Dable part of the Sean McDermott coaching tree.
Right.
But many people, when he got the Giants job, referred to him as the Bill Belichick coaching tree more than the Sean McDermott coaching. Right. Because mostly because I believe the coaches that Sean McDermott had worked, the coordinators that he'd worked with, weren't going out and having their press conferences saying, oh, I learned so much from Sean McDermott. I'm going to instill that here. Even Brady. He was respectful. I thought he did a much better job than the organization at honoring what Sean McDermott had built over the past almost decade.
Totally agree.
But he still talked mostly about how he is a disciple of Sean Payton. Like he's going to, you know, he has these experiences. He learned so much. Da, da, da. And so there's something to that. That is the biggest, brightest, screaming red flag I can point to as to why this was a proper change. Is that there wasn't anybody coming around being like, oh, this revolutionary coach. I think his discipline, his research, his preparation is all excellent. and he probably will be coaching somewhere in the league after a year off. But I don't know if I think, like you mentioned in a text message, does he never return to head coaching? Does he just become an excellent defensive coordinator, like a la Leslie Frazier? He had his shot. He had a team for a long time. He had some great success. But what he proved was that his leadership style, his CEO style, is not the kind that unifies or brings an organization together and makes people buy in. I think that that's the biggest problem. Is we had former players, Jerry Hughes, others are talking about how, you know, this is long overdue. I noticed on Eric Wood's, Eric Wood is an employee of the Buffalo Bills. And on a recent podcast, somebody like wrote in a question, fan question or something, or like, what, you know, who's it? What was an experience you had with a head coach? Cause you had so many. Da-da. He brought up Rex Ryan as his favorite pregame speech head coach. And he played for, you know, a season and a half with Sean McDermott. So it's the kind of thing where I'm just like, there's too much smoke for there not to be fire, that Sean McDermott didn't have the locker room, had it, and then lost, you know, faith in him as the years went on and the failures piled up. And I think that I remember us talking quite a bit about the Tyler Dunn piece and how much that made sense, that anonymous sources were like, oh, and whenever it gets super hard, he gets anxious and like everything crumbles, right? Like year over year, that happening is too much. 33 points, 27 points, 33, you know, like all of the scores against his vaunted Sean McDermott defense. It was high time for a change. And I'm very excited to talk about the massive, massive overhaul to the defense specifically.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that is the thing that has been most striking outside of the starkly different tone that Brady looked to set out at his opening press conference and the subsequent press interview since. Like, he seems like a really positive, energetic, charismatic guy. We know he's got scheme chops, even though we disagree with some of the play calling tendencies, and I'm sure there's going to be more of that this year, right? But for the most part, what seemed like a move that brought with it little to no change, to me, actually does feel like a pretty big change, that we had this guy here in the building that had these philosophies, that had this sort of very targeted vision for how he would lead this organization at the coaching level. And I think the Bills realistically were scared of losing him. And you can see with some of the coaching hires he's made, I think this is a great time to get into that, why the Bills, not the hire will justify itself based on whether or not he wins, but you can see why the Bills were scared to let him out of the building, because the dude really does have a complete, and I would say somewhat complex, like nuanced vision for how he wants to build out this team. I'm sure he has thoughts on the roster, but based on what we've seen with the coaching hires, JJ, I mean, it's even on offense, it's not going to be the same as I think we have seen in years past. So where do you want to start? Because the Bills have made a lot of moves, special teams, offensive line, OC, DC. You want to start with the coordinators, I assume. You want to start with Leonard, or you want to start with Carmichael?
I think we should start with Carmichael because it's the most, like, it's the most organic flow from, you have an offensive head coach in Joe Brady who has led this offense for two and a half years, and who is carrying this offense forward with play calling responsibilities, who then brought in Pete Carmichael, who has been Sean Payton's complete right-hand man from his time with the Saints. And then on up to the Broncos. Was he the QB coach there? I don't think he was a senior offensive assistant.
He was OC with the Broncos.
He was OC? Okay.
Yeah.
Who takes that's a surprising thing to me, I guess. He takes a lateral move to come to the Bills just to probably work with Josh Allen, right? Like, I think that's the draw there.
No, he wasn't OC. You're right. He was QB coach and passing game coordinator.
Yeah. I thought he had like a senior assistant coach or something like that.
He did. Yeah. He was OC. I apologize. He was OC in New Orleans.
Yeah, for Drew Brees through, you know, I think he had a 5,000-yard passer four consecutive seasons with Drew Brees. So he knows something about designing an offense that his head coach is going to call, because Sean Payton has always been the caller, right? And so I really like the hire. I think that his chops are in the fact that even after Drew Brees retired, the Saints still had some productive years while they were trying to smash it together with, you know, hodgepodge pieces at QB and skill positions. And for that, I think he also has had the experience of, you know, Alvin Kamara in his backfield. He's got James Cook now, somewhat of a similar style in the way they attack the run and catching passes. So I expect running back pass catching to go way up, right? There's a lot of different nuances. So I think, I mean, that hire for me was excellent. in terms of providing somebody who's not just an assistant or secretary to the head coach who's the play caller, which I think you see sometimes with these offensive OCs. It's the Eric Bieniemy, right? Like, didn't get any other opportunities for a super long time because nobody really respected the work he did. I don't think this is that case.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think with Carmichael too, what you get, especially because he was the first big domino to be added to the staff, you've seen what Brady has added since. A lot of guys from the college game, a lot of guys in their early to mid 30s. Like, this is it's a group of very young, energetic coaches. Carmichael seems like he's not just going to be Brady's right-hand man, but he is going to be kind of like the statesman of that coaching room, right? Like, that's the guy who's been to Super Bowls. That's the guy who's been through every playoff situation you can possibly imagine. He seems like he's going to be sort of the course corrector should things go a little bit too far one way or the other. It's not an inexperienced coaching staff per se, but it is a staff where there are a lot of guys that are new to this level of coaching in the NFL. Carmichael to me seems like not just a great fit for Brady and what he wants to install for an offense, but he's also going to be, I think, like I said, an elder statesman, so to speak, on this group of, outside of him, relatively young and untested coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a piece of that is, he, like you said, kind of like a steadying body in the room, somebody who's got so much experience that it's sort of like when McDermott took over and had Frazier come in as a DC who had head coaching experience. Like, Pete Carmichael has not been a head coach in the NFL, but that level of it, time on task, accrued seasons of high level, you know, production is something that I think Joe Brady can lean on, and Joe Brady knows him well. I think that's the other piece. Yeah. So that's, I mean, I'm really excited about that pickup. The new offensive line coach, because I think we have to mention right now, the retirement of Aaron Cromer is potentially the biggest, like maybe the biggest hurdle that this offense is going to have to overcome in the coming year. Other than, you know, pending free agents on the offensive line and things of that nature, is having one of the best coaches, if not the best offensive line mind in the league, taking retirement, which he's well deserved. He's had a great career. And then the line coach from the Steelers, whose name is, remind me.
Oh, God. I have it pulled up here. Hang on. Yeah.
Because it's not on the Bills website yet. It's not made official. I don't think his contract has been finalized.
I don't think it's been finalized either.
It's a Schefter report at the current time.
Yes. Bills offensive line coach.
Ryan. Is it Ryan?
I want to say it's Smith, which I know is wrong. Pat Meyer. There we go.
Pat Meyer. Yeah. So Pat Meyer, who, you know,
Spent time with Cromer. Yeah.
Spent time with Cromer at two different stops, which I think is, you spent time with the LA Rams and with the Bills, has a familiarity with the Bills organization, has worked for them in the past. So I think that's a, you know, it's solid. I'm hopeful, but it's really hard to know until we get, you know, snaps on tape in the regular season. We won't know how big of a drop off that is with the development of the talent.
Well, and not just the development of the talent, because listen, we began to, the Bills, God, I will mire myself in this history for forever. It took them so long to get the offensive line right after so many resources spent on it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the defensive line situation we're going through right now.
Right now,
I digress. Yeah. Right, this very moment. But when they got it right, Cromer didn't just develop the talent. I think we're going to find out how involved he was in the install of the run scheme, because there have been murmurs that. And this would be the scariest situation imaginable for the Bills, is that Cromer was responsible for the run install. Brady was responsible for the passing game, right? So we're going to find that out real quick as Brady maintains play calling, how much of a role, not just Cromer had in the development of the talent and the steadying of that offensive line, but we're going to see real quick if there's a drop off in this run game, what impact Aaron Cromer might have really had.
Yeah, and I think you're right that there's something terrifying about that. The best thing about this offense might have just walked out the door into the sunset and retirement, and what we're left with is whip screens in the passing game and no wide receiver talent or connection or chemistry in the passing game.
We'll get to that when we talk about Bean for sure. Yep. So
I think that's yet to be seen how the offensive line, offensive coaches come together. I know that a lot of the offensive staff is sticking In terms of, you know, Rob Boris, looks like Rob Boris is staying at tight ends. Ron Curry is looking to stay at quarterbacks. And then they have a couple other player or former players running back. Kelly Skipper is the coach there. And so I'm interested in to see how that goes.
Are they keeping Skipper as running back coach?
I mean, his profile is still on the website right now. So
that, I mean, I guess I don't hate that. But like, so they got to figure out that running back rotation, man. Yeah. Like, if I see James Cook out on second downs again, I'm going to lose my effing mind this season. Like, it's right, just crazy. Yeah. I know you want to get to Leonard, but real quick, I know. And I'm going to give you the floor for that one. Jeff Rogers, special teams coach for the Buffalo Bills. This is one I didn't like.
Yeah. So he is coming from Arizona. His biggest claim to fame is that he has had multiple years of having excellent return units, but middle of the pack coverage units. So that's the thing that you worry about with the change there is his track record. I mean, he's been the special teams coordinator for like 10 or 11 years, and including he's survived two or three coaching changes in Arizona, which is hard to do when a brand new regime comes in. You have to have your chops underneath you to stick as a coordinator when a brand new coach comes in, because they all have relationships. They all know people around the league that they trust. But his tape proved it to these new coaches. And so I think that's a good get. It's the kind of thing where it's not the same as the Bills promoting, assistant special teams coordinators year over year as people were taken out of their job and kicked to the curb. It's like they did last year when they brought, I've already forgotten him because he's in the Dolphins now.
Chris Tabor.
Yeah, it's like last year when they brought Chris Tabor in. This is a different philosophy. It's bringing somebody in who absolutely knows what they're doing and is not learning on the job. So for that measure, I think it looks good. It's going to be interesting because I think Ray Davis, as an all-pro kick return guy, largely got to that position because of Tabor's run scheme. He was basically creating zone and gap runs on the kick return for Ray Davis with a fullback, with blocking schemes. So it'll be really interesting to see if they carry that forward at all, or if, you know, Ray Davis has 1 year of all-pro as a kick returner and then returns to, special teams, you know, all four phases, not as big of a role.
Yeah, I think this is the hire that Bills fans are going to give the least amount of grace to if there is a drop off in Ray Davis's production or anything like that. I mean, I've charted because I'm in off-season mode. Like, what the hell else am I doing? The DVOA of the special teams for the Arizona Cardinals over the past few years, but a steady decline, man. Yeah. And when the new kick rules came in, like, they went from, I think, 18th to 30th in DVOA. So
that doesn't feel good.
This is like, listen, proof is going to be in the pudding, obviously, but special teams coaches are one of those things I've always been like, do you coach good units? Because everybody is getting borderline practice squad guys, second, sometimes third string guys to fill in that unit. Everyone's working with the same caliber of talent outside of your kick and punt returner on special teams. So that's something I feel like is fairly well equalized across the league. And I can just look at your metrics and I can decide if you're a good coach or not. And his metrics have been on the decline. So I don't love this one, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about, okay. I was going to cue you up. Yeah, go for it. What's up?
No, I'm just getting excited. You just saw me shaking with anticipation.
Gotcha. Oh, I thought you did this. All right, cool. Big Papa Jim Leonard. I think that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
The thing that was, I think, the most stark contrast to me in this press conference wasn't just Brady's energy, but he had a really clear vision for this defense. And it was an energetic vision about being able to attack, being able to put offensive coordinators and opposing QBs on their heels. Like, he attacked it at the cerebral level and the on-the-play level. And then he backed up a lot of that vision and a lot of that talk, which I think is maybe one of the best coaching hires of the offseason cycle, bringing Jim Leonard on from the Denver Broncos to be our full-time play caller and defensive coordinator on the defensive side. JJ, lots of change coming. This is not going to be the McDermott rush four, sit back and soft zone. This is going to be a very different scheme. You have been digging into Jim Leonard tape from his college days, from his coaching with Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah.
Yep. from his work here in the NFL at the pro level. Where do you want to start, man? The floor is yours. Take us on a journey.
So two things I think are going to be substantially different for Bills Mafia when we start watching this defense. One is going to be the time-honored, annoying, frustrating thing we always used to say of the defense is the defense. The Sean McDermott / Leslie Frazier defense was built on the foundation of we can keep our same 11 on the field, play in and play out, and we're going to meet and match you and keep everything in front of us and stop, you know, big plays over the top, right? Like, and we're going to give you the underneath stuff. Well, that's the first thing that's going to change. You're going to see a lot of different packages coming on and off the field with the Jim Leonard 3-4 defense, and you're going to see, like, they're not going to give you an inch. And it's going to be much more like the really frustrating defenses that the Bills have faced in critical moments with the Ravens, with the Chiefs. It's way more like that. It's the exact thing that you hope the defense doesn't do to your offense on a big third and 11 is exactly what the Bills defense under this new coordinator are going to do if they can get the pieces in place. So that's one. You're going to see more multiple combinations of players. You're going to see situations where the Bills might give a big play up because they're stuck in a personnel that's not ideal for the situation, because it is very critical that you get your rotations in and out. Defense is given an option or an opportunity to sub players when the offense is, and that's, you know, a good rule change for this defense, but there is a possibility with like a hurry up that like you can't get the guys you need out there and you have a bad matchup. So that's something to see. That's one, is the swap outs. It's no longer we're going to sit with our exact nickel defense and just put players in positions to do what we want them to do. And then two, and this is one of the things that I think is most exciting, sack production, if they can, again, get the right people, is going up. Because as an odd front, they have three down linemen and then four linebackers. Two of them are outside rush linebackers who can cover, can rush, and then two inside backers can cover, can rush. The idea is that with these long, large-bodied outside linebackers, you have a five-man front every snap, and you don't know who's coming, who's stunting, where they're twisting, where they're flying to. Wisconsin, Jim Leonard ran a defense that was top 25 in the nation for a decade. You know how freaking hard that is in college?
And
you
have people. It's impossible.
Yeah, you have people coming and going. You have
name, image, and likeness too. Yeah.
Pre-NIL, you have players coming and going, graduating, leaving for the draft. And it is, you know, he was doing this all year in and year out. He was coaching people up and developing talent at a program it's not USC. Well, USC is comparable, I guess. It's not Alabama. It's not, you know, any of the other major powerhouses. It's Wisconsin, a very good program, a storied program, but not one of the like hot and sexy SEC teams that everybody's kind of filtering through. And so that alone, on top of like, you know, Jim Leonard, I'll fanboy for a second, childhood hero of mine, only played for like three seasons for the Bills on his second stint, but was awesome. Came to the Bills as an undrafted rookie free agent after being passed up in the draft because he was told he was never going to be the right size, the right speed, etc. But then was just had a 10 or 11 year NFL career, always being counted out, but always just making plays. And I remember it was a bleak times in the early 2000s for Bills fans. Jim Leonard was a bright spot as a safety for a couple of seasons.
Awesome, dude. I want to get in. We're going to have a chance to do Madden GM here after our hiatus.
Oh, personnel is going to have to change. Ed Oliver, trade candidate, day one.
So this is what I want to get to real quick, right? Like, I've already kind of put some internet chum in the water for the Jim Leonard hire means these guys are going to be gone. Of course, we don't know anything, right? We just, we want clicks and engagement. And thank you, Threads community, for doing that. You guys have been great and giving us some awesome stuff. Like, you and I have not had a chance to talk about it, though. Who to you that is currently on the roster has the best shot of remaining on the roster? I'm going to give you some names, all right? Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, Taron Johnson, Deion Walker. Out of that grouping, who has the best chance in your mind to remain on the squad and fit the scheme? And then who is the guy or guys that maybe don't?
So I think Greg Rousseau and Deion Walker both have a chance to stick. So Deion Walker doesn't perfectly fit a 5-eye, 3-4 defensive tackle role, but I think he could do it because he's more of a penetrating style rush D DT, even though he has size more like a nose.
But he definitely
can't play nose. He can't play nose. He can't anchor. Like, he won't. The Bills don't currently have a player on the roster who can anchor as a nose in a 3-4 defense, in this this attacking 3-4 defense. So I actually am sad that you didn't bring up TJ Sanders, because he's a big question mark for me. I don't know what the heck they're going to do with him, because he is not, he's not the size nor the athleticism for any of the three positions on the front in the 3-4.
Yeah.
But I do think that Deion Walker sticks. I think Greg Rousseau sticks, because Greg Rousseau, I think it's a coin flip as to whether they shift him to outside linebacker or let him try to bulk up a little bit to be a 3-4 defensive end and shade the tackle. Because I think that it's, he plays much stronger than his weight. And he always has been that. Like, he's kind of lanky. He's a lanky, bigger frame, longer frame guy who has a little bit more athleticism, but he's been better at anchoring against, you know, big tackles than you'd expect him to be at that size. So I think Groot and Deion Walker, of course, stick. I think Ed Oliver and Taron Johnson, I don't know where they fit or how they fit.
I mean, Taron Johnson has basically played linebacker, right, for the Buffalo Bills, because of the way they stay in nickel and they ask him to fit the run. Leonard Skeem is not going to ask him to fit the run in the same way. And he's also not going to see, for the salary he is currently taking in, the amount of snap share that he has seen, because the scheme is changing so much. I don't necessarily have him yet as like a pure cut candidate. I actually think him and Dawson Knox, they're going to be asked to do the Matt Milano. They're going to be asked to do the Von Miller. Like, listen, we can cut you guys. We'd prefer not to let you go, though, because of what you mean to the team. And they're going to be pay cut candidates, I think. And if they can't come to that agreement, I do think they ultimately both get cut. But yeah, yeah. Johnson to me is the most tenuous. Yeah.
Do you think Taron Johnson has anything to offer as a dime safety, as a safety, as a starting safety?
That's an interesting question. You and I have talked about like the inevitability of Taron Johnson going over to safety. I think the instincts are still there, right? But the ability, like, you're talking about him playing free safety. Like, can he play Micah Hyde? Can he play side to side? Can he play deep? Can he read and react? And can he pass cover? And like, listen, man, his run fits were bad. Is a nickel DB this year. Like, his pass coverage was bad too. Like, he just had a hard time staying sticky on guys. Maybe with a little bit more time to read and react from center field, he can be a reliable safety net. But to me, I think you've got to swing for that in the draft. You got to go for like a Bud Clark. You got to go for, is it a Genesis Rodriguez, the kid out of Wisconsin? I don't know. I'm still getting into my draft prep.
Yeah.
But you got to go with someone who can play true center field. You really need to find your Micah Hyde. And I think it would be respectful to Taron to give him that opportunity. But I think you are setting yourself back in a year where clearly you need to go all in with this new scheme to get the most out of it. I think I prefer to see him as a cut, because I just don't think he's got much. I don't think he's got more viability than a rookie candidate in that particular role.
I also don't think that safety, free, deep third free safety that this defense relies upon for the center of the field closed coverages that Jim Leonard will roll out is not an impossibility to get, even with the Bills' restricted salary cap. You can get a mid to late 20s quality safety who can play that role on the free agent market, even late in the free agent market, post June 1, like, there's probably going to be somebody floating out there.
Right. I'd rather take a flyer on one of them. Like I said, I'd rather spend some draft capital on it. I'd rather see a top 100 pick come in. So you've got your young pairing of Bishop, box safety, free safety, or Jordan Poyer, and then you bring up your new Micah Hyde in the system. Like, I'd prefer to see that. I love Taron. I love what he's meant to the team, but I watched him in pass coverage. I don't love him in center field next to Cole Bishop.
Well, his physical style of play has worn his body down, and he is he post 30 at this point?
Yes, he's going to be 32 next.
Okay, 32. Next, yeah, post 30, having played like a linebacker on a slighter frame, that the miles, right?
Dude, like, I mean, he's been fitting 320-pound guards his entire career. Like, that's going to take a toll on you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think he's a pay cut candidate. And I think if they can't come to terms on that, I think he's an outright cut probably. I didn't bring up TJ Sanders because I think he's gone. I didn't bring up Landon Jackson because I think he's gone too. Like, it's going to be another like Bean 30% hit rate on a draft class, which I want to talk a little bit about that. right? And I want to wrap up on that. For all the goodwill I think Brady has instilled, and I think Brady has done a good job threading the needle of paying homage and proper respect to what McDermott built, but in a clear-eyed and optimistic way, acknowledging what about the McDermott years needed to change. The defensive scheme, the general energy and vibe in the clubhouse on game day. Like, he has done a good job threading that needle. And he's done it, I think, with a lot of oratory and grace. Brandon Bean has done the opposite of that throughout this entire press tour that he has gone on with Joe Brady. The F the outside comment that he made recently on, I forget the pod, Go Long, on the Go Long mm-hmm. podcast, is yet another soundbite to me in the Brandon Bean 365-day cycle from the quit your bitchin' to the F the outside and everything in between, of a guy who I felt like was beloved by this fan base for his contributions to ending the drought and building sustained success. Now, he just seems like a guy who is has so believed his own hype and has lost the ability to be self-aware. He, to me, has become the opposite of Chris Ballard, the anti-Chris Ballard. Chris Ballard in Indy has been on the hot seat for what feels like 3 or 4 years. He, and why? Because he has hit on every other position in that organization from a draft and free agency standpoint, except for the QB. Every other word out of Brandon Bean's mouth seems to be, well, I drafted Josh Allen, but what else have you done around that, right? Like, you have done, like, if you had had even half the success a guy like Chris Ballard had and filling out the rest of this roster, we'd probably be talking about the Bills in multiple Super Bowls, but he hasn't. And he continues to try to cash the check of, but you guys wanted Josh Rosen, I picked Josh Allen. And I feel like this has to be the last year for that, right? I don't think Bean gets removed from the organization, but there is a world where if he misses on another free agent class, particularly if he fails to fill out this defensive roster in the way that Leonard needs it to be filled out, and the offense doesn't improve, and he doesn't make any strides in the wide receiver room, I feel like he has to give up GM responsibilities after this season. He's not going to get fired, but that to me is as much of a hot seat as Bean is going to face. My tolerance for his shtick has worn very, very thin, right? So for all the grace and goodwill that Brady has done such a good job building up, every time Bean opens his mouth, I feel like he's ruining it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. It just like, when did like big baller Bean go so bizarro, like angry egomaniac Bean, right? Like I think it was the last 2.5-3 drafts of just complete misses, right? Where he like started buying into his own myth as if he was like, he's special. And meanwhile, his hit rate on the top five rounds of the draft, which is the critical place to get year over year starters, has just been miss after miss after miss after miss. Dwayne Carter, like,
also was won't be back with the team next
was
year.
About to be cut before mm-hmm. he got injured, right? They only put him on injury reserve because he was like, the only reason he even stayed with the team is because they could park him on injured reserve and see what comes of it. So it's just, oh man, it's just been a mess. I think if Bean can recreate this roster in the image the coaches need to fulfill their scheme, that's going to be his only way to redemption. Because I agree. I think that if we see more of the same, of him slapping it together with some middling free agent contracts that end up looking like absolute like tire fires, I think you're right. I think it might be Terry Pegula's time to be like, let's promote somebody else to GM to make all of the roster decisions.
Like Terrence Gray, right? Yeah. I mean, he's sitting there waiting in the wings. You know what I mean? And other teams really covet him. So that's kind of my theory. That was my theory at the beginning of this anyway, after I saw that Bean took on this president of football operations role, that he was eventually going to give up personnel responsibilities and bring on a GM. But I mean, man. Talk about a small margin for error. He's got to nail the draft. He's got to nail free agency. You cannot afford another Josh Palmer mid-tier miss. And you know what I would like to stop hearing Bean talk about? How hard it is to fill out a roster when you have an expensive quarterback. Mm-hmm. The way that Josh Allen's deal is structured compared to like a Joe Burrow. Yes, the cap hit is larger, but the way that deal is structured in cash versus cap and percentage of cap that Josh is taking every year, he's not even a top 10 QB when it comes to percentage of cap that he takes up. Joe Burrow, on the other hand, is 25%, and he demanded his two buddies at wide receiver get paid and somehow was trying to demand that Trey Hendrickson got paid. But that is a financial impossibility when you're a QB that takes up a quarter of your cap space. Josh Allen's not doing that. The way he has structured this deal with his agent was very careful to allow the Bills cap flexibility. And if you're a GM and you cannot work with a top flight QB whose actual percentage of cap taken up every year is outside the top 10, I don't think you deserve your job. And I want to hear Brandon Bean stop complaining about the burden that Josh Allen's contract is and instead treat it like the privilege it is to have a future Hall of Fame QB on the roster that you need to help get over the finish line with your personnel decisions.
Right. Right. And I think that that's the other thing is, again, the last 2 years, in the same 2 years that Sean McDermott as the coach started to engender more respect and responsibility and people are like, okay, coming around, Bean has been slumping and more it's about what excuses he can make for why this didn't work. Oh, they didn't want to trade with us. We had the best offer on the table and they didn't want to trade. They would have traded if you like threw the farm at them. I know that's what GMs do. You had a line, you drew a line in the sand, you said, we're not willing to go above it. They said no, and you did not counter. And that's a choice you make. Own that choice. Own that it was too rich. Don't complain that the other GMs aren't playing nice, right? Like,
right. Don't say it's like all these young GMs want to play Madden. Howie Roseman makes trades. Brent Veach makes trades. Like the Baltimore Ravens, they make trades. Like give me a break with this. Oh, this young guy, like shoot from the ready, fire, aim stuff. Like, give me a break, dude. Like, I mean, so many experienced GMs use the full season cycle to better their roster in a way that's been more competent and more complete than Brandon Bean has. Do they have their misses? Absolutely. Everyone does.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone's got their misses. It's how it goes. But the reason the Bills are in the salary cap hell that they're in right now is because they have missed consistently on the draft. The Philadelphia Eagles, the New England Patriots, the Seattle Seahawks are all getting valuable contributions from guys that are on rookie contracts. And when you have guys on rookie contracts successfully filling out your roster, you can splurge a little bit more in free agency. You can take a bigger swing at a trade and bring out a veteran player that's got a higher level contract because you've got those rookie safeguards that are backstopping you, not just from a talent perspective, but from a salary cap perspective as well. The reason the Bills are in salary cap hell isn't because they have a Hall of Fame QB they're playing. It's because Bean has missed on draft after draft after draft, and they are not benefiting from the rookie backstops that other better managed organizations are. That's what it is. Own it, move on, and hit the draft.
Well said. I think, too, all I need to say is they've spent 10 picks in the top five rounds over Bean's tenure on defensive linemen. And they've gotten one solid starter in Ed Oliver, one reasonable starter in Greg Rousseau, and 8 complete duds, absolute misses. Deion Walker, jury's still out, could be a reasonable starter. But 3 out of 10 is not. It is not acceptable for the top 3, top 4 rounds of the draft picks on those positions.
And then the free agent money that you then throw at mid-tier veterans to try to make it work and try to piece it together. I mean, it's just, and the wide receiver room is the same thing. Look at the wide receivers that he's brought in through free agency or the draft, right? Like, it's me with the Josh Allen is such a burden. Shut up, man. Yeah. Your draft history is the anchor weighing down this team right now. Yeah, that's absolutely the burden. Yes, 100%. AJ, let's end it on a positive note. The Patriots are in the Super Bowl. Sorry.
You got me with that one.
I got you. Yeah, I got you. Yikes. That was good. That was payback for like a couple of pods ago.
Keon Coleman switch. Yeah.
No, the Gabe Davis prop. Well,
Gabe Davis,
right?
Yeah.
It was the Gabe Davis one.
That's right.
That was absolute payback. This is our last opportunity to do predictions sure to go wrong. And I think we should do it Super Bowl edition, because after this, for all of you listening at home, we are taking our normal February hiatus from the pod. We'll be active on socials. We'll be doing our homework for you on the draft, on free agency, so we can bring you a little bit of knowledge about where we think the Bills should go here this offseason. But before we get to that, there is one final game in the NFL to be played. Our friend of the pod, not friend of the Bills, Brandon, very happy with what he supposes will be the outcome of this game. But JJ, real quick. Let's handicap the Super Bowl here. So you got the Seahawks, you got the Patriots. Seahawks have stayed a steady 4.5 point favorite in this game, which I think is fair. Over under on this game is 45.5 points. JJ, where do you see the Super Bowl going here?
I think that for the final score, I think they do hit the over, because I think, of course, with 2 weeks preparation, every team's going to bring their best shot. I don't think we're going to see a boring defensive, you know, drub fest like the AFC Championship game. And I do think that the Seattle Seahawks take this one. I think it's like a 27-17 type affair. So that's under, I guess, 44.
Yeah, that'd be under. But I think that's fair. I think the two best units in this game are the opposing defenses. Mm-hmm. The metrics on Seattle's defense are absolutely wild. Like every time I look up one of their next gen stats, every time I'm pulling up something from FTN, it's like a first team in 20 years, first team in 25 years, successor. Their success rate in stopping the run out of dime is 70% in change. Like unheard of. Yep. Dime personnel. Yep. So this defense is stout. I will say this, they have not played, the one area they can be had is out of structure plays, because they are so disciplined. They like to dictate the timing of the opposing QB. They have not had to play a lot of QBs that are good at playing out of structure. They haven't played Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, haven't played any of those guys. When they are clocked by EPA per play against out of structure plays or second reaction throws, they drop from top two in the league in EPA per play all the way down to 14th. And they are going against an opposing QB in Drake May, who has not had a good postseason for a variety of reasons. But he's a dude who can extend plays, who can make second reaction throws, and who can play out of structure. This is a challenging QB for this vaunted Seattle defense to go up against. To your point, with 2 weeks, I think they'll have a plan for that. But I think, to me, that's the big wild card in this game. On the other side of the ball, if you are the New England Patriots, can you heat up Sam Darnold? Like, Sam Darnold has been unconscious for the last 2 months of the season, but he's still led the league over the course of those 2 months in turnover-worthy plays. So if you're the Patriots, can you continue this kind of defensive revitalization, heat up Sam Darnold? I think the Patriots win this game in the most stupid Super Bowl we've seen since the Patriots beat the Rams 10-3. Yeah. I think this game is like a weird score. I'm gonna go 16-12 New England Patriots in the dumbest Super Bowl we have seen in our lifetime, because that's what this season, honestly, that's what this ridiculous NFL season deserves. It deserves a dumb Super Bowl to end the year.
Right.
And I think that's what we're gonna get.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, I mean, that is a reasonable thing to expect. But I'm keeping it hope alive, Bills Mafia, that we don't have to suffer the absolute insufferable. And this isn't a jab at Brandon, but this is a jab at all of those stupid, stinking New England Patriots fans who like literally disappeared and put on Patagonias and then waited 3 years while their team sucked. And then showed back up out of the blue like, oh, never gave up. I'd never quit, Patriot Nation. Yeah, no, those bastards are going to be all over, and they're going to be absolutely insufferable if the Patriots win the Super Bowl. I can't with them. So please, Darnold, you got to pull this one out for us.
Our hopes for a peaceful offseason rest on the right shoulder of one Sam Darnold. And that is not a bet I'm willing to take. I hope I'm wrong, but I am preparing myself for a dumb Super Bowl this weekend. All right, man. Listen, this is it. We've hit our offseason break. For all of you listening at home, again, we will be back at the start of the league year in March with our usual content, Madden GM, draft preview, Friends of the Pod edition to help preview the AFC East, all of it in the works. But until then, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, YouTube, Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.